Hey guys, it's your host Julian. This week I'm sitting down with Kevin Alatieri to talk all things Batman the Animated Series. If you guys are in the Kansas City area, swing over to Planet Comic Con Kansas City, March 8th through the 10th to get some artwork and ask a question or two. I want to give a special shout out to a couple of our patrons that help make this podcast each week possible. Bill, Brent, Brittany, Eight-Legged Bird, Patrick, and Jacob. Thank you all so much for your support. It truly means a lot. If you want to become a patron and help support this show, check the show notes and sign up today. One quick side note, if you guys submitted a question for Kevin. We ran out of time during this episode. However, the episode we released last week with Dan and Kevin have the questions that you guys asked. So make sure you go and check that one out. Now, let's get to my chat with Kevin. How does Kevin get on Batman the Animated Series?
How do I get on it? Well, I worked with Bruce at Deke. Like I was, Deke was like my entree into the animation industry. It was like the first animation jobs I had. Before that, I was doing like B-movie special effects. Well, actually, not all B-movies. Like I worked on things like Megaforce and for Intravision. And I did a lot of TV commercials. I was, you know, doing a lot of storyboards. And I had done comics for Cartoons Magazine. Mm-hmm. So before that... But I was working at Deke in the early 80s, and about the time I was working on Cops, I met Bruce, so we knew each other. And Bruce, he was on Cops briefly, and then he was on Beanie and Cecil. But, you know, we were in the same studio, so we knew each other. And when they started Batman, I think Bruce was told by someone that, oh, you got to get Kevin on this because it's like, you know, he's one of the very few guys that can do action, you know. I'd done Alf Tales and, you know, I was in Starcom and like in Cops, and I was, none of them really satisfied me, you know, as far as being action cartoons. So actually, Bruce contacted me and said, you know, we're doing a new Batman, you know, a new Batman cartoon. And I'd heard about it and I was like, oh, great. The Tiny Toons guys are doing a new Batman. This is going to be a new Super Friends. You know? So I'm like, I'm kind of snobby. Where was I working at that time? I think I was in development on Lion King and Treasure Planet. And I left Disney. So it was like the right timing. And I ended up going to the office and I was like, as smug as can be. And Bruce showed me this trailer that they did. And I was like, holy shit, they're doing Fleischer Superman. Oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like they want to do Flight, you know, and they openly said, you know, Gene McCurdy and Bruce and Eric, you know, they all said, yeah, we're trying to emulate, you know, the Fleischer Supermans. And so from that instant, I was on board. They hired me as a director. There wasn't anyone there yet. I think it was just me for a few weeks there. It was just me and Bruce and Eric and Ann Lighting. And, you know, it was just like the skeleton crew just, you know, before they were actually hiring and bringing on more people. So I was on it right from the beginning of the series.
You know, so what were...
It was, that, ahead, it was that trailer that sold me, boy. I mean, as soon as I saw that thing, you know, everyone's seen it now, but man.
What was the trailer for the folks that might not have seen it? Was it just that intro?
The opening is kind of the opening of the series, the first opening, you know, that without the titles and stuff. That's kind of what the original trailer was. It was just like, you know, it was kind of like 4 minutes of Batman doing his thing, catching these robbers, you know, getting into a fight, the way that Batman fights, big close up with the eyes, like, yeah. You know, squinting down and everything. It was just, it was all the tropes that became Batman were kind of in that original trailer that they did. I think that was animated in Canada, but it just had this really unique look that you never saw other than outside of Fleischer Supermans and stuff.
So with that initial trailer catching you, what was, you were there since the early days, but what was that main focus from Bruce and Paul? Was there anything that they were really trying to push and get in there for Batman? Because this is a couple years after the 89 Batman, the Keaton Batman was coming out. So I got to imagine Batman fever was you know, going everywhere. But what was that feeling like, or that emotion like, with Batman just being on everybody's mind?
Well, I'm a nerd and I'm a geek, you know, and it's like, and everything's kind of, I really wasn't aware of it, or I was probably the only one that wasn't really concentrating on that. I mean, I like the Tim Burton movie. I think Tim Burton's really good, but I wasn't really impressed, because Michael Keaton, great actor, just, you know, I'm such a snob. Like, I go there and it's like, how come the smallest guy is Batman?
Yeah.
The big guy should be Batman, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and Jack Nicholson's just Jack Nicholson. He's not, you know, it's like, I mean, he's the Joker. Yeah. It's like, he's a good actor. It's great. But I just can't help but there's Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. The smile, you know? So I wasn't really, you know, the fever was there and the attention. I really didn't. I was just kind of nose to the grindstone, because at that time, the crew that we had, and it's true of the whole industry, action adventure had not really been done. So finding artists that could do that was really difficult. So it was like, really, especially on Leather Wings, which is the pilot, I'm spending so much time correcting stuff and trying to get that Bruce Timm style in the characters. Mm-hmm. We actually had layout people who were animators that would like refuse to draw like Bruce. You know, I was like, well, you better draw like Bruce. What are they going to do? Fire me? Just might.
Yeah.
Just might happen if you can't get the style. I mean, we need that style. You know, and people could go off of it a little bit. And like, some of the best layout guys were just, they were really good. So I was just spending so much time doing the cartoon, and there was so much drawing and stuff, and we were doing full layouts in studio, that I really didn't know anything until I went to a WonderCon, which used to be a great con up in Oakland, California, and I used to fly up there and just go there. And I went there, and I knew, because I had friends that were working at DC Comics and stuff. You know, I went over to the DC booth, and there was Denny O'Neill, and Denny O'Neill was kind of like heading up stuff. He says, "Hey," he said, "Kevin, we love your cartoon at the office, man. It's like, as a matter of fact, we're going to be showing it today." And I'm like, "Oh, really? Yeah." He said, "Yeah, you got to stop by. You got to stop in. It's going to be on at like 2:30 or something." Okay. So I go across the street, and I have like fish and chips, and I have two or three pints, you know, of like good old stout in me. And I say, "Hey, you're going to show my cartoon." I say to my friends, you know, "And let's go over there." So I run across the street, and I can hear the theme playing.
Mm-hmm.
I walk into this theater, and it's packed with people. So I just sat in the audience, you know, and the reaction of the audience, like, they were there for every friggin' moment. When when Man-Bat goes screaming past the Zeppelin, the blimp goes screaming past, and the pilot goes, "Huh?" And he's following that, and all of a sudden Batman's face hits the screen. The whole audience jumped, you know, and I was like, that's what I want. And when the final fights happen, and Batman's on Man-Bat's back and just like letting him have it, this kid in front of me goes, "They finally fucking did it."
They did it.
And so, of course, you know, the audience erupts, and I'm like, wow, I had no idea. Oh, okay, this is good. This is before the thing's even on the air, you know. Now, you talk to Dan Reba and Bruce and everyone else, and they're sitting there saying, "Oh, we knew this was going to be big." I had no idea. I mean, I was just working. I was just trying to get it right. And of course, Denny O'Neill says, "Hey, I think the director's in the audience here. Hey, Kevin, come on up." I'm like, "Oh man, I really wish I didn't have that last beer." You know, because I'm not, and I'm up there and it's like, it's embarrassing. You know, I was embarrassed. They say, "So who's that voice? Who's that guy playing Batman?" And I go, "It's Kevin." And I realized at that point, I only knew Kevin as Kevin because we both had the same name. We'd walk in and say, "Hey, Kevin, hey, Kevin." You know, that's how I knew Kevin Conroy. I just blanked on his last name. I was not prepared or anything. But yeah, that's the first time I actually had an idea that this was going to go over really, really big.
What a way to go over really big, you know what I mean? Now, I ask this question typically of everybody. What was it like, you know, seeing your name in the first time you saw your name in the credits? And then what was it like, you know, sitting out there watching it, you know, with the crowd that was not the people at the studios, not the voice cast, or not the, you know, not anybody that worked on the show, seeing it with a real civilian audience, getting real honest answers or real honest emotions whenever something would happen on the screen. Obviously, you said you had a few too many of those stouts, you said, so it might be a little hazy. But do you remember like that what did that feeling feel like to you? I got to imagine it was wild. It might have been surreal.
Yeah, it's surreal. Yeah, because up until then, my entire career in animation was like, the studios, like I knew that ALF and ALF Tales were hits for NBC, you know, the executives would let you know. And I knew that Cops was doing well, and I knew, you know your cartoons are doing well, and they're critically, you know. But as a director, you know, I'm staying up till 4 a.m. constantly, you know. It's like the amount of storyboards we're doing is just astonishing, how many, like, especially on Ghostbusters. It's like how much I had to do with Ghostbusters is shocking. And you get no credit at all. Your name's just one of the ones that's at the end that they're just flicking through those credits as fast as they can. And I even designed the end credits and I don't get a credit, you know?
Wow.
And it's like, and Warner Brothers just had the policy. It's like, no, director gets a title card. You know, it was just their policy at the time, which I think Steven Spielberg insisted on that for Tiny Toons. So it just became company policy, you know, that a director actually got credit. At that time, like, Disney was doing some really good cartoons. But if you look at the Disney credits there, they said directed by so-and-so, the TV shows. Those are timing directors. Those guys couldn't draw for shit, to be blunt. Hope you don't mind.
Not at all, man. I like honesty on this one. Now,
and there's tremendous artists through all over the place, and they're just names. They're just boom buried in the back credits. You know, voice. Yeah, these artists. You know, when I was a little kid, and another part of the reason why I was in love with animation so much is like Johnny Quest. Johnny Quest, if you look at like the old school ones, they didn't give so many technical credits, you know. And the credits that were given they went by pretty fast, but they gave credit where credit was due. You know, the artists really got credit. Like, I knew Alex Toth worked on that episode because I could read it in the credits, you know, and my young eyes and my young brain, I could, you know, I actually would do something like I would like blink my eyes. So you'd get like a shutter
snapshot. Yeah.
Snapshot of, you know, and I would be able to read the credits that way. So, you know, trying to catch these things. So that's why I knew who Doug Wildey was and why I knew who Alex Toth was and Mike Sikowski and, you know, you name them. Iwo Takamoto, you know.
Such legends.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like all the Hanna-Barbera cartoons were, you know, not all of them, but things like Space Ghost, you know, Dino Boy, and things like that.
I don't know if you can
Very
see him,
influential.
but got
Yes, I see.
Space Ghost right there. You know, I can't point. Fuck. Made me look dumb. But yeah, I've got a couple of those. Alex Toth is one of those guys that I am just so fascinated with. I mean, his artwork, you know, the fact that he designed so many characters that will go down as could literally be on anybody's Mount Rushmore. You could pick 10 of them and they'd be on somebody's Mount Rushmore. Just a phenomenal talent, man. With
Influence.
you getting on, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Huge influence, not just with me, but everybody on Batman. You
Oh, I
know.
could, you could tell. I mean, it was that one. What was another influence on that one? Because for sure you said Fleischer and then Toth, and you could definitely see those two in there. But is there anyone that Bruce and Paul really wanted to push for?
I don't know. Like Paul at the beginning, Paul was still on Tiny Toons. I think it's like Mr. Freeze, I think was his only script at the time. I'm not
Heart of
sure.
Ice, yeah.
Heart of Ice, yeah. But as far as like influence, well, believe it or not, I tell people this, but character design wise, how would I describe the style of Batman? Well, it's a cross between Alex Toth and Dan DiCarlo, Archie.
Yeah, wow.
Because there was a wonderful simplicity about the Archie comics, especially when you got guys like Dan DiCarlo and stuff. It's like just how they would, just the line they would use, and you know, just very elegant how they got to, you know, it's like with just like the very how just how Dan DiCarlo would draw such a pretty girl with so few lines, you
Yes.
know. That was stuff that we were trying to dissect and trying to absorb, you know. So those are the influences, and you know, and background wise, you know, it's like that was Ted Blackman, so that was all the, you know, it was like Hugh Ferris. We all had these Hugh Ferris books and stuff, you know, like 1930s, 1940s architecture, you know, architects, and Disney, the high style Disney that was done like in the 50s, like Ivan Earle, you know, those were all influences. But you know, but everyone there was like enthusiastic and like kind of grew up on all this stuff. So it was like finally we get a chance to let loose and do it. And we actually had animation studios that could accomplish it, which is always a big problem at Deke, although the Deke connection was still there. We're like when I came over, Ken Doerr came over. We all knew each other from Deke. Me, Dan Reba, Brad Rader, you know, Mike Gogan, Mark Wallace. We were all at Deke together. And we were all like huge Japanese animation fans too. So the Japanese studio Spectrum, Fukuda was actually someone that we worked with, and we had been over in Japan with him. I was at Deke. They were sending me over to Japan all the time with every one of these shows. So you got to know all the Japanese animation directors. And they just, well, that's why TMS ended up on the show. You know, it
Yeah.
was like through those kind of connections. And Ken Doerr, he, you know, became a producer, but he was over at Deke. He started out as just a translator because perfect, you know. Perfect English to Japanese translation. I got really spoiled with that guy because I could just talk straight to a director, and it's like instant, you know. I just had this guy translating, and you know he's translating it the way you're speaking. It's not some stilted, weird kind of thing. And
Yeah.
he came up with Batman, and he had all the connections for the animation studios, so. That's part of the reason why we got such high quality on some, not on all of them, but Spectrum, TMS, you know, did excellent, excellent work.
So when I think of Batman, when I go and buy my comics every Wednesday, because I'm still a Wednesday warrior, the voice I hear in Batman is still Kevin Conroy whenever Batman is
Oh,
talking.
enough. Yeah, there's it's everyone else just kind of who plays Batman. There's been some good actors who go for it.
Nobody's Batman like Kevin Ryan.
No one gets it. No one gets it. And Kevin Conroy, when I first met him, I'm 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Looking up. Here's this strapping, broad-shouldered, good lantern-jawed, good-looking guy. You know, and his regular voice is, it's kind of light. You know, it's normal. It's kind of light, normal. But then when he plays Batman, it's like...
He transforms.
Deep. And it's not like a put-on, gravelly, weird thing. Like, I want to see you bleed. Oh, fuck you. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't be. But it's just like, God, why would you... He wouldn't talk like that. You know, Kevin Conroy, the guy just nails it. Just nails it. And he act, you know, and that, and he could have played Batman. He should have played Batman in the live
action. He was our Batman, though. You know, I know he didn't get to do that live action, but there are so many people that when we think of Batman, we think of Kevin Conroy. They are 1A and 1B, whatever you want to call it. They are, you can't have one without the other. I close my eyes, or whenever I'm reading, like I said, whenever I'm reading Batman every other Wednesday or every third Wednesday, whenever it comes out from my comic book store, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm hearing Kevin Conroy. He is no longer here, sadly. But that voice, that performance, that he put everything into that, and we felt that as kids. We feel that as teenagers. And going back and watching this as an adult, man, you feel it as an adult.
Yeah.
You know?
No, especially in that Mask of the Phantasm.
Mm-hmm.
Where he really gets in the thing that I loved is when you're at the recordings, and that was like wonderful, you know, Andrea Romano, you know, the directors have to be at the recording. And it's like she was one of the best voice directors ever, just for the fact that she could get the talent, could attract them to the job, you know, because they all trusted her and all knew she was good. And she would have them all in the room together. So the actors are acting on each other, and watching Kevin Conroy, one of the early things that he said is he'd ask a question, you know, it's like, so this is Bruce, but he's alone. And I would say, so this is Bruce, right? Not Batman, but this is Bruce. I said, yes, but he's alone with Alfred, or he's alone with Dick. And that's okay. Batman's voice is Bruce Wayne's real voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was that's great, because that was, you know, Kevin Conroy is an actor. This is what he brings to it. He figured out that, no, that deep Batman voice, like in the episode Avatar, when he's dealing with Talia and he's Bruce Wayne, he's dressed up with joppers and, you know, in just a regular suit. He's Bruce Wayne. But when he's with Talia, he's always talking with Batman's voice. That's mm-hmm. Bruce Wayne's actual persona. And I thought that was like really brilliant. You know, it's like, well, you know, it's like whether actor would do that. It's like, you know, no, the lighthearted, the light voice is a put on.
That's smart.
Yeah. And it's like an anti, and that's another thing I loved about the series is that he's the playboy.
Mm-hmm.
In Two-Face Part 1, you know, not in the script, great script, but one of the few things that I stuck in there is like when Harvey's leaving to meet his destiny, to meet his fate with Rupert Thorne, he walks past Bruce and Bruce is like chatting it up with this really pretty girl, you know, and she's like, oh, wait, I'll be back. Like, oh, you know, it's like even, you know, he's always playing the playboy. We know he's not a playboy. We know that when it gets dark, he's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he very successfully puts on the playboy act.
That he does,
and that's a put on.
Now, with you being there, I want to stick on Kevin for just a second, because, you know, I've only had, you're the second guy I've had on from Batman. The first one was Alan Burnett, and that was almost probably my first year, so it's almost 3 years ago. And then I've got Dan Reba coming on in a couple of weeks, and I'm really looking forward to it. So I haven't gotten to do too much Kevin Conroy talk. Now, since you were there since the inception, essentially the beginning of Batman, before anything was ever really released other than that little 4 minute trailer, I got to imagine Kevin was already cast at that point, but was there anybody that got any real consideration, or did Kevin just blow everybody out of the water right out of the gate?
From everything I can understand, I mean, I never heard anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, I heard a bunch of Jokers, you know, mm-hmm. although Tim Curry was the original Joker.
Yeah.
But for whatever reasons, he couldn't do the show. So, you know, I heard like 20, 30, 40 different people trying to be the Joker, and they're all mm-hmm. pretty good voice actors. And then there's this, then, you know, you hear this one and I go, well, that's it.
The great one. Yeah. It's
like, that's it. Oh, this is the perfect one. And then Bruce goes, guess who this is? Mark Hamill. No way. It's not Luke Skywalker. It's like, yep. Things like that. But you know, Kevin Conroy, I don't think anyone else tried out. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think he was just Andrea knew him and picked him, and
the rest is history.
Yeah, I think he just showed up for whatever, you know, audition, and he got the job. I don't think there was ever a thought of anyone else.
That's a good thing.
He's such a good actor too. It's like he was a John Houseman theater guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he did Shakespeare and just all sorts of stuff. So he really brought that to it. Like his voice, you can visualize stuff. One of the greatest moments in my entire career was for Harlequinade, when the scene is where Batman has got Harley in the Batmobile. And watching Arlene Sorkin and Kevin Conroy acting that together was just hilarious. It was fantastic, you know, and just them doing the give and take back and forth. Actually, there was more give and take and back and forth between Harley and Batman than there ever was with Batman and the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, the Joker and Batman would yell at each other and say things. But it wasn't like Harley, you know.
No,
he actually took an interest in her. You know the characters took an interest in, you know, in it, in her, because she somehow might be redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
So Batman's always interested in that. But just like the relationship that they had in the booth was just funny. I'm sorry that you guys couldn't have seen that.
and we get to relive it through your eyes and your memories. Now, with that one, you know, being, you like you said, one of your greatest memories or times with Kevin and the voice crew and just your career, was there one or two moments that stuck out that you think about, like you think about that story you just told with him and Arlene about Kevin?
No, when he's doing the, I was on Mask of the Phantasm. I got all the Joker scenes because I had been robbed of the Joker
mm-hmm.
that first season, you know. So when it came to Mask of the Phantasm, I just went to Bruce and Eric and Alan Burnett and just went,
let me get Joker. It.
Joker. The only Joker I did was The Last Laugh, and that was with Tim Curry. Which was a thrill, you know. So I ended up at the recording for Mask of the Phantasm, and Kevin Conroy doing that. What would I call it? If it was Shakespeare, it'd be a soliloquy, but where he's talking to his parents mm-hmm. and explaining to them that, you know, he never thought he was going to be happy. And now he has a chance to be happy. And he says, is that wrong? You know, and all he is he's talking to a tombstone.
Yes.
But there is, man, it's like Kevin Conroy, he went deep. like deep. Personally, you could see it. Andrea goes walking into the booth after he's done and is like, you okay? You know? Because it's like, I mean, it's like good actors, it's like that's what they do. And I'm not sure. It's like there's so many interviews with him where I'm sure you could find it. But, you know, but he just went someplace that really hurt him in his life. You know, he went somewhere deep. And that was like, fuck, this guy's an actor. It's like, oh, my God. That was something to watch.
I got to imagine, yeah. Man, to be a fly on the wall during that era, in that time, man, be an amazing experience to get to do. And like I said, man, we bring up Kevin. I like to do these parts of the podcast. I know they are very tough because a lot of these are still raw and it is still new. Like I said, you know, we're going into year two with him being passed away. And it just doesn't feel real and it doesn't feel right, man. Our hero, you know, our Cape Crusader, our Batman, you know, is no longer here. And he'll forever be missed and he'll forever be immortalized as Batman. Anybody at what do they call it, man? There's been many to duplicate, but nobody will ever be able to replicate what Kevin Conroy did and meant to so many of us, you know?
No. And Arlene.
Arlene, I mean, as well, yeah.
Like, I love the new Harley show. You know, I think it's great. You know, it's like it's not what I would have come up with, but it's like it's a cool. It's rated R, you know, and it's funny, but it's funnier than hell. And it's like it's its own Harley, but Arlene was really was Harley, you know. Like that delivery was just natural for her. Mm-hmm. It just came out, you know, it just came out naturally. Like you could just like if she said, give me a, you know, just the way she would say pudding.
Yeah.
You know, it's like actors. It's like, you know, it's like you go, Arlene could go from, you know, pudding, you know, like when it's like, you were going to come back and get me, weren't you, Puddin'? Or Puddin', you know, or like, I don't know how many things. And then when she's mad, the last time she says it is Puddin'. just so good. There is not going to be no other performance. And by the way, I'm really interested in seeing Lady Gaga's take on her.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Was she born in Long Island or Queens? Whatever, she's got the right heritage. Nice Italian girl from New York. She can do it. She understands.
Oh, she will.
Yeah. So, there's many actresses that can, and I enjoy like the takes on Harley, the same as I like most of the takes on Batman. But there ain't going to be another Harley, and there ain't going to be another Batman. Not like that.
No, and sir, like, there won't.
They're no longer with us, but they're immortal.
Yes.
This ain't going away.
No, they're not. If anything, they get stronger.
Yeah, and they're as important to the whole pantheon of animation as Mel Blanc, you know? Mm-hmm. Just as important in a different manner, you know? It's like, you know, again, there are good guys doing Bugs Bunny, Tasmanian Devil, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not Mel Blanc.
Yeah.
There just isn't that level of funny. And I don't even think the actors that are doing it now would even argue that. They, you know, they wouldn't go, oh, no, of course, you know. There's just another level that, you know, that, and it's not just true of Kevin and Arlene. It's most of that cast, you know. Bob Hastings. And going to the recordings. The one thing that I miss more than anything is just showing up at the recordings and Bob Hastings and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. It was like they were like my uncles. It was like they were my dad's best friends that came over and visited the house, you know. Hey kid, how you doing? You know? And I'm like, I'm 34, kid. Oh, okay. But it's just like Bob Hastings. It's just, and then there's, you just show up and you're just sharing stories and talking about like what happened. And it's like, hey, how's your dad doing? And it's like, oh, my dad's good, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Andrea's like, in the booth, children, come on.
We got to get to work.
Yep. We're here for a reason. No, and the other thing about our about the recordings of Warner Brothers, and I do that, especially like when I was at Hasbro, and you know, I would actually share the development, like what the characters look like. Like when they hired David Warner to be Ra's al Ghul, I was able to go and show him, this is your character. And he's like, all right, I like it. I like it. And then Bruce did an alternate where his suit was black. And he's like, why? No. The green, please. Yes, you got it. We're not changing it. It's like, why? Because David Warner said, don't change. You know? Yeah, it was, you know, and you get to share stuff with the actors, and it's, well, it's rare. It's a real, when you have the recurring cast coming back every time, like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Bob and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., you know. I think, you know, and their daughters and stuff are now name actresses too. So, you know, you could talk to them about their careers, and, you know, it was just a really great family feeling.
Yeah.
That is very, very rare. Now. Very rare. The last time that happened was when I was working on Transformers Rescue Bots, which was, you know, a science fiction kids show that, you know, that Brian and Nicole, the story editors, and, you know, they took very seriously and had a really big family following. And that cast, you know, is again, another real family feeling. You know, like you loved seeing them every time you show up at the recordings. Jason Marsden, Maurice LaMarche. It was just great to be able to work with these people and see them and be so comfortable and talk to them, you know. And it's weird that, you know, there's Mark Hamill. He was on Rescue Bots too, by the way. And it's like, here's Mark Hamill again, you know. And I hired Mark Hamill on Stripperella and Gen 13. You know, he's they're just people. It's like, and you go like, this guy doesn't need the money, obviously not. Just
no,
start.
Not at all.
And so he's doing this just because he loves acting, you know, and he loves doing voice acting, and he loves, you know, and he's one of those guys that just has like a million voices in him.
Mm-hmm.
Characterization. So, yeah, it was, I don't know. That I miss, especially the way that Andrea wrote, you know, Andrea ran things. It was really, really good, really fun. You know.
Yeah.
And I got to meet like a lot of people, a lot of actors that I really admired. Dick Miller, you know. I'm just going, it's Dick Miller. It's the guy from, you know, I don't know how many Roger Corman movies I saw him in growing up, and it's like, you know, and he was Boxy Bennett, you know, and then there's, you know, like I said, I got to meet Malcolm McDowell. I got to meet Elizabeth Montgomery. I got to meet Paul Williams, you know. I've got the Phantom of the Paradise poster here in the wall, you know. It's like Paul Williams. It's like, and I got to, you know, it's just great.
Anyhow, it sounds like you got to live multiple lives.
Kind of.
Yeah.
For a few years there, yeah. It wasn't easy, let me tell you. it was a lot of work. But every time you do a cartoon, even a cartoon that comes out lousy is still a lot of work behind it if you're doing it right, you know. And especially on Batman, when you knew, well, it's kind of like a pilot in a spaceship, you know. You know, originally they thought that they were going to take astronauts, you know, and just put them in there and shoot them off and recover them. But it's like when they take off, it's like, he's a pilot. You tell him the condition of his ship. Like what they told John Glenn when he's in orbit and they're afraid that the heat shields are going to come off. And it's like, you tell him he's a pilot, you know? And it's like, kind of like when you're a director, you're an artist. Warner Brothers is one of the few studios that would tell you which animation studio was going to get this episode. Mm-hmm. So The Last Laugh is going to go to ACOM. That really amps up how much work you have to do before, because ACOM's going to do a bad job.
Yeah.
They're not capable of doing a good one. So you pull out everything you've got to try and make it as idiot-proof as possible, which is solid, solid drawings, solid, solid layouts, you know, so that they really don't have to think too much for themselves, and they can just follow what is there. Sunrise was another one. Once you knew that Sunrise was going to farm it out to China or someplace like that, it really made you think hard.
Yeah.
You're doing the storyboard and just, you know, and you get, yeah, and you, we had the crew, you know, that would actually understand that. And you would really gear it. You know, it's like Two-Face, like when I got the script for Feet of Clay Part 2, originally they're talking about ACOM, and I go to Bruce and I'm like, there ain't no way ACOM is going to pull this one off.
Yeah.
And they said, you're right, you're right. You get TMS for this one. The TMS has got to do it. So, you know, they rearranged the schedule, did whatever they needed to do to get TMS to get that one. Because they were the only studio that really could pull it off.
That's another phenomenal episode too, by the way.
Well, thank you.
No, yeah. Thank you. I mean, you guys fucking crush it. Like, I tried really, like, because when you gave me the four episodes that you said you were really proud of, and that one wasn't on there, I was like, fuck, because I wanted to talk about that one so much, because Scarecrow has always been my guy, like when it came to, like, he scared me a lot as a kid, you know, because I had grandparents that when I grew up, or where they grew up, and they lived in West Virginia, and they had cornfields all over the place, and they had hay, and they would always have like this Scarecrow. And I remember seeing this as a little kid and being terrified by sitting on my granny's porch looking out there, because I like I said, I saw Batman, I saw him, I was waiting, like I wouldn't blink, I would stand out there and just look. I'm like, all right, he's gonna move, and I blink, and I would assume that he would move only when I blinked and shit. So I'd always try to make sure that I would not blink, you know. So it scared the fuck out of me as a kid, Scarecrow. And then I go and I see something like Clayface, and I'm like, oh my God, this is really, really cool. Just the level and depth of character you guys would give the villains, and then the heroes as well. And then rounding that out, like, I've never been, I love Mark Hamill, don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen, I know this is sacrilegious in the Batman universe, I've never been a Joker guy. I've always, it's the same thing with Marvel Comics. I like those C and D level characters. Yeah. You know, I liked the Luke Cages and the Daredevils back in the day before they became A-list actors, or excuse me, A-list characters. But I love Mr. Freeze too, and that would be rounding out my top three. You know what I mean? You guys did such phenomenal jobs with those three in particular.
Yeah, no, when they were having trouble with the scripts before Alan Burnett came on board and Randy Rogel, at the beginning, I actually wrote an outline for a sequel to, for Mr. Freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, in the, it was actually, I think the last episode I did was Deep Freeze. I just wanted to do Mr. Freeze. I'm with you. It's like,
yes,
I just saw so much in that. And it's like, and the fact that he had his wife with him and she was like frozen. And it's like, the Deep Freeze, the episode that we did was not like my outline. There's things in there like the Freeze robots and stuff. But the way I saw Mr. Freeze was like Dr. Fibes, you know? And it's like in his wife, I don't know if you've ever seen the Dr. Fibes movie with Vincent Price. So I saw, you know, it's like, he's like this eccentric, you know, character. And he's got Carolyn Monroe, who's a great actress, one of the most beautiful women in the world. All she is in this glass case, preserved, you know, wife that he wants to reunite with. And he's going through, you know, revenge and all this too, you know, and the ultimate thing is he wants to be with his wife again. And that I really wanted to do. And Paul wrote that, the last script, you know, Deep Freeze, and had it where she came back. Now, of course, they thaw her out and she's fine, you know.
Yeah.
But I think she was always dead, you know. Just to me, it's like she serves a purpose. And when she actually becomes a character, it's like, well,
what's his motivation?
He's lost. It's like, you know, it's like, why is he even around anymore? You know, now he can talk to his wife. Why aren't you guys together?
Now he's not as angry as he used to be. That, you know, when I think of that episode, you know, there was so many. Heart of Ice is, like I said, this one on Leathery Wings, you know, I love the Clayface two-parter. Like when I think of Batman the Animated Series, those are the episodes I think about. You know, I think of the Gray Ghost because that was the first time, because not a lot of kids my age grew up with the 66 Batman. That was running in reruns all the time on TV. So hearing the Gray Ghost and then hearing Adam West, I'm like, they did it. They were connecting things way back in the day before people were connecting and interconnected universes. So I always thought that was a really cool touch, even as a little kid. You know, but like I said, when I think of these great episodes, I think of those three in particular. And when I think of Deep Freeze, that final shot that you guys have of Nora and Mr. Freeze, and I think it's like pulsating at the end as it goes to black, was just beautiful. Him just kneeling down, her there, and then him trapped in this purgatory essentially that he made of himself when he blew up this. Was that a Walt Disney? Were you guys playing on Walt Disney and the whole cryo shocked head?
Oh, yeah.
Was that? Yeah, I had a feeling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No question. Yeah. No. That was Walt Disney in Epcot Center.
How easy was that to get past Warner Brothers? Because I got to imagine they're like, yeah, let's take a shot at Disney.
They do it. Even in the interviews, it's like, you know, they were freaking out because after the show was on the air, I was just saying he's like a Walt Disney guy, you know, and they're like, don't say that. It's like, oh my God, how can they miss it? It's like,
he looks like Walt. He's got the mustache.
He looks like Walt. It's Walt. You know, yeah. It's Uncle Walt. It's like, it's Walt Disney. There's no question. But
You ever get any flack or do you ever get any kickback or anything like that? Anybody at Disney ever say anything when you go back?
No.
No?
No, no one ever said a word.
No?
I mean, not to me anyway. Well,
Roy was just rubbing his hands. We're going to get Kevin back one of these days.
No, when I worked at Disney, it's like, it's really weird. It's like, it's like Disney feature and I was in development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's really not a very friendly place. Is all
I've heard.
Yeah, it's like, it's all true, and it's like, and they're pretty cheap too.
Mm-hmm.
And the only positive comments I got, like on Lion King, I was doing a lot of watercolors and concepts. You know, I was one of the first people to, because the original script was called Jungle King, and I just said lions live on the savannah.
Yeah,
do your research. I mean, every time I'm looking at books, I'm looking at National Geographic, I'm gathering everything, and there is not a single picture of a lion in a jungle. You know, it's like rhinos aren't in jungles either. You know, it's like all these animals. Anyway, and Roy Disney, he would come by, you know, once in a while, he would come by and check on stuff. And he was, other than Vance Gary, who's one of the great guy. I owe him a lot too. Just sitting down and working with him, doing watercolors. He had positive. He says, "Yeah, just do another watercolor. Just keep doing those, man. It's like you got some ideas, kid. You know." Mm-hmm. And Roy Disney was the only other person that had positive feedback. He didn't have any motivation to be nice to anyone, but he came in and he's like, I like that. Yeah. You did that? Yeah. you know, it's like he was one of the very few people that actually had positive vibes to give. Really great guy, Roy.
That's really cool.
Again, he's one of those guys that doesn't have to be nice. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many people who don't have to be nice, and they are not nice. You know, I don't have to be. Why am I talking to you? I don't know. You know, there's so many people like that. But then you'll meet someone like that, you know, and it's like, yeah, like, you know, Luke Skywalker doesn't have to be nice to you. I don't think he has a Mark Hamill has a mean bone in his body. One thing that I learned, and it's like big disappointments, like when I first went, you know, and I was very poor growing up. So any of the money that I earned washing dishes and stuff, you know, it was very dear to me, you know, so I would go to conventions, and this was back in the 70s, you know, but I grew up with artists that I revered, you know, and I won't say the names of the ones. I won't say the names of the ones.
What's it rhyme with, Kevin? What's it rhyme with? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, there are artists that I just like, you know, because I wanted to be an artist so bad. And then there were artists that I just admired so much. And I look so forward to seeing them. Mm-hmm. And then you meet them in person. And yeah, I'm a 16-year-old long-haired kid. Sure. But my God, did you really have to be a shithead? Mm. Wow. It's like it's so easy for you to be mean to me. All I did was I wanted to come up and meet you and, like, you know, pay my $15 for a sketch. Now I'd like to take this sketch and just throw it away.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many artists like that. They're just like so full of themselves and so mean. You know, I don't have to talk to you. You know, it's like that kind of thing. And then there are people like that I met. And again, this isn't animation necessarily. But like, I remember one convention I went to, and I'm a huge Jeff Jones fan, you know, Jeff Catherine Jones, but Jeff Jones at that time. He was doing Idol, I think, for National Lampoon at the time, but he was doing quite a bit of comics to it there. But I just revered him. And I went to one convention in New York, and I'm standing at this table with all this Jeff Jones stuff and this Idol book, you know, really good stuff. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at these posters that are wonderful, you know, of Jones' work. And I'm looking, and the guy behind me goes and says, "What do you think?" I'm like, "This guy's a master. Just I just look at his drawings and I just don't know how I can ever be that good. It's like the inking is just so just flows. It's so brilliant how he uses the brush. I can't control a brush like that." And this guy goes, "Eh, he's not that good." And I'm like, "Oh, no. This guy, Jones is as good as it gets." You know, so I buy a couple of those, you know, posters and stuff, and I leave and I go over. And a friend of mine comes over and says, "What did Jones say to you?" And I look over at him, and Jones is like, I came over and he's like, "Yeah, I'll sign those for you." Nicest guy.
Yeah.
Nicest guy. Humble. You know, he just wanted to hear what I thought, you know, because it was like that was important to him. You know, and another guy, like my ex-wife at the time, she was a painter and she was working at Ruby Spears. Mm-hmm. And she has these presentation pieces that she's painting, you know, but it's like it's drawn, but then she puts the paint on it, you know, to finish. And I pick it up and it's like, you know who this is? Yeah, it's Jack. It's friggin' Jack Kirby. You're working with Jack Kirby and you didn't say anything? Well, I don't know. He's just a nice guy. And then you meet Jack Kirby and you never met a more generous, warm-hearted, good person than Jack Kirby. And I don't think the only time I ever heard him swear was I you know, I was talking to him one time, you know, I think it was at Ruby Spears. And I never heard him say a single curse word, except when I went and said, "So, Jack, you obviously created Fantastic Four, Thor, Hulk, X-Men. You know, I mean, obviously it's you. Stan didn't create that." Because at that point, Stan was taking credit for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately, never heard a cuss word out of this guy. And he says, "Yeah, that fucking cocksucker." And it's like, wow. Yeah, and you talk about people who don't have to be. And if you think about Jack Kirby and the life he led, you know, this guy is responsible for World War II. I mean, Saving Private Ryan was his life. Like, mm-hmm. he was there from D-Day plus four on, fighting through hedgerow country as, you know, as a scout. You know, it's like, and God, it's like, you think about the life that guy led and that he survived, you know, how much, I mean, he basically had to be a murderer. Because if you ever got into a fight with Jack Kirby, it ain't a fight. It's murder.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to win. You know, that's Jack Kirby. You know, I mean, it's like, it's those little guys from New York, you know, for like my dad, you know, East Coast. You know, it's like, don't underestimate them, man. Because if you get into a fight, it's murder. You're just done. Mm-hmm. And that was Jack Kirby. And yet, you never met a nicer, more generous, giving guy than Jack Kirby, you know? So that's kind of what I hope I'm like. If I ever catch myself being a shithead to fans, it's like, I just, you know, just try, just, I just don't, you know, I don't think I could live with myself, you know? I just don't want to be, there are times when you have to be mean or something, when people are, you know, like if I'm out surfing or something, you know, it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. you got to stand up for yourself. But as far as fandom and the way that you interact with the people who admire your work, you know, it's like you have to, try and get rid of the memories of the guys that were rotten to you.
Yeah.
And not just guys, you know, women are included in this because there's been a few of them that I admired as artists, you know, and were really not what you hoped they would be.
Yeah.
So you just try and be the best person you can be, you know, and mm-hmm. Kevin Conley is that.
Yeah.
Mark Conley is that, you know. Anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, beautiful sentiment. It's always nice to pay it forward, and it's always nice when you get to meet your heroes. They're still heroes at the end of the day, because I have met a couple of those people at those cons that, you know, excuse me, you wait in line for 2+ hours and you get up there and then you're just like, dude, why'd you come here if you were going to be this just, you know, hateful, or just this seeming like you didn't want to meet anybody here? I mean, I'd much rather have never have met you than meet you and then had waited all this time. And then it just, you know, I've gotten the chance to meet so many of you guys that have just been so genuine and so kind with your time and your stories, you know, that I always tell everybody, go and meet your heroes. It doesn't matter who they are. Go and meet your heroes, because everybody I've ever had on here has just been fucking phenomenal. Like I said, with the stories, the time, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, you guys have always answered questions, and I can't ever thank you guys enough, because you guys, like I said, you guys helped raise me. You know, you said you helped. What'd you say when I said you guys helped raise me? It's like, I thought we corrupted you or something like that, you know, with this TV show. I was like, no, this show instilled in me at such a young age to be a good person. Like, the good always outwins or outbeats, or it goes and beats the bad, you know? And since we were talking Jack the King, Kirby, and Stan Lee, I'd be remiss not to ask you, because I've actually gotten to talk to his daughter quite a few times at a couple different cons, Athena Finger. Now, obviously, it's a it's more so known now to the mainstream than it was, you know, when Batman the Animated Series was going on. But I got to imagine it was an artist knew what really happened with Bob Kane and Bill Finger. Did you guys know? I mean, I think Bill had already passed away by the time Batman the Animated Series was already coming out.
It goes way, like Dan Reba and me, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, to be completely honest, yes, Bob Kane was there.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Kane was in charge. Because Dan Reba and I, we both grew up with that little paperback Batman book that had like early, it was black and white, and it had all of the early Batman, including the origin story. Dan, not me so much, but Dan Reba would collect, we were both at Deke together, and he would collect, you know, big little books and stuff from way back when, from the 30s and 40s, you know. You know, and they were all illustrated. You know, you'd be, you know, prose on one page, and the next page would just be an illustration. So we'd go through the books, and it's like, there's the panel that Bob Kane ripped off and put into the origin story. You know, it's like the scene where he's like, we knew that Bob Kane drew that because, criminals are a cowardly lot. Yeah, there's that drawing. It's like you could track it down. He just swiped it from a big little, you know, it's like he traced it. Yeah. You know, so that was, you know, so that was Bob Kane, you know, Bill Finger, Jerry Robinson. It's so obvious.
Yes. How much
they brought to it. It's the same thing with Stan Lee. Wally Wood said it best. Yep. You write the story, you pencil it, then you ink it, and you hand it in, and Stan Lee has done it. Stan Lee has written everything. He's done everything. You know? Yeah. And I work with Stan on Stripperella.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was the executive producer, you know, but... yeah, it's like I can tell you that it's like I knew Stan Lee and I knew Jack Kirby. And everything Jack said about Stan is absolutely correct. Not to speak ill of the dead, but you know, Stan, you know, God bless him, he was responsible for the whole Marvel universe, you know, for bringing it about, but he was the guy who, like Bob Kane, could pick talent or, you know, have the right people do the right job, you know, and he could organize it. And that's a skill. That's, you know, Bob Kane. That's what he did. But the fact that he had to slap his name on it and not put anyone else's is egregious.
Absolutely. Jerry
Robinson came up with the Joker. There's no question. You know, there's no question. And Batman wouldn't be Batman without Bill Finger.
Absolutely not.
And the thing that really sucks is how the people are like, it's like, really, it's like, okay, you know, Bob, you're going to take this to the grave, you know, or even Stan. It's like, you're not, just say it. Just say it. Steve Ditko created Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard. What do you achieve? You know, is it money or is it, you know, I mean, how much fame do you need? You know, can't you just be generous? You know, and it's like, and that it's in my own life, you know. It's like, you know, not to speak ill of people, but like, do the evolution. The rock video I did for Pearl Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's like looking inside of my head, literally, you know, and if there's one cartoon that I've done that looks like I drew it, that's it. And yet Todd McFarlane, you know, he got the job. Todd McFarlane, you know, he wouldn't even mention my name.
Yeah.
You know, all he would say is like, this is my directorial debut. And I was like, and that was the last time I ever worked for him.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, really, you're not going to mention my name on something thing that, you know, that I, you know, that clearly is me, you know, those, that's my drawing. Literally, that's my drawing that you're signing and taking credit for, you know.
I've never understood that, and I'm so, it sucks that it happened to you. It sucks that it happened to Bill. It sucks that it's continually to happen. It's happening to somebody right now. Somebody's taking credit for somebody's drawing.
It's happening to me, you know, right now, even as we talk.
You know, and it's such sure a shame. I'm sure it is, you know, it's such a shame, but, you know, if anything good has come from this, getting to see Batman versus Superman back in 2016, I think it was when it happened, to finally get there and you see Batman versus Superman, the title go on the screen, and it said created by Bob Kane, and then right below it, it said with Bill Finger. I really feel like that is a step in the right direction. You know, it, with the internet, nothing can stay hidden. All of these things that people have said, you can fact check everything these days.
Yeah. Well, it's like, look what Kirby, like, Kirby was denied the vast fortune that his, mm-hmm. all of his characters have garnered. But he lived a decent life out in Thousand Oaks out here. You know, he worked in animation. It's like, he had a loving family. He was a happy guy, happily married. You know, he married the love of his life. Obviously, you could tell. You could tell, like, when you see him and Roz, they love each other. You know, he had a good life. But the thing that irked him, you know, and this is what he said to me, and it's not just me that he'd say it to, it was the credit.
Yes. The credit.
You know, that's what bothered him. Like Stan Lee saying that he had created Captain America. It's like, Captain America, what was it, 1941, 42?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Stan Lee was still in high school. I'm not sure. Maybe he was in middle school. I don't know. It's like, but he wasn't even old enough to be in the army. It's like, and Jack Kirby got drafted. But he was the creator of Captain America. There's no question. And Simon, with Simon too, and it's like, you know, but it's signed Simon and Kirby, or Kirby and Simon. You know, they're not trying to sneak one over each other. But look how much it took.
Mm-hmm.
Like Marvel, you was like, really, you're gonna go with this, huh? Just Stan Lee's the only creator. Had to take it to the Supreme Court. And right before it goes to the Supreme Court, Disney goes and says, well, what are we talking about? You know, it's like, it's so obvious. Just give him a credit and settle it out of court, you know, and they I don't know how much they paid the family. But that
not enough.
No, not enough, but it doesn't have to be.
Hmm.
Because, you know, the family is like, suppose, let's say, they settled low. I don't know how much money. Say it's $50 million. For normal people, that's awesome. That's a lot of money. It's from now on, the name is on the screen when his characters are on the screen. Jack Kirby gets a credit. When Black Panther is on the screen, Kirby, you know, and Don McGregor, you know, Billy Graham, you know, it's like, you know, because Killraven, was it Killmonger? Yeah, that was Billy Graham, I believe, created it. I'm not sure. Might have been Rich Buckler. But anyway, the names are there. The people who create it, you know. Jim Starlin gets a credit for creating Thanos. So that's the norm now. But look at how long it took for that to be the norm.
Yeah.
And how much it took, how much litigation. It's astonishing. And it's stupid.
It is. So yes, sir. Stupid.
When I was on Stripperella, they were having a photo shoot. I mean, I went to lunch or something. I can't remember, but I come back and it's at Nickelodeon and they're having a photo shoot in my office. And there's Stan Lee holding a pencil over one of my drawings. Stan Lee animator. It's like, really, you're going to try and pull that on it? And by the way, I think Pam Anderson stopped that because she actually created Stripperella. I mean, come on. Pam Anderson, you know, coming up with Stripperella. Of course she did.
Yeah.
Of course she did. You know? Anyway.
Yeah, man. What a, like I said, I'm just glad that it is at least happening now where, like I said, the people are starting to get the credit. It does suck that it took so long. I really wish that Bill would have got to see his name up on the screen. You know, I wish, you know, I think the story is that he died broke, destitute, and alone, unfortunately, you know, and it's just for so long, it's like you were saying about Jack. I mean, I'm pretty sure the money was a good thing to have, but you know, what most people want is they want credit. They want people to know that they had a part in creating their childhood, you know?
Yeah, well, Jack Kirby worked right up to the end. Mm-hmm. Bill Finger couldn't.
Yeah.
Siegel and Shuster couldn't. You know, they, you know, it's like their eyesight or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, it's like, and Neil Adams, to give Neil Adams, there's a guy, you know, super, super major, like one of the greatest influences, you know.
Absolutely.
On Batman, obviously. That was my Batman, was the Neil Adams, Denny mm-hmm. O'Neill Batman. And
what a duo, too. What a fucking duo. God.
Yeah, and thinking about back then, how spoiled I was that I would just expect this every month, you know?
I would never get any work done. I would go wherever those two were. And if you could get George Perez and Marv Wolfman in there, it would be just that'd be the Mount Rushmore right there. I'm like, please tell me stories of all of these DC comics of yesteryear, please.
Yeah, no, Marv, he worked on Batman quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy, too. He would, you know, there's another generous person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He would have, after every San Diego Con, him and his wife would give a party, an after party.
Yeah.
At their house, just open their house up in Sherman Oaks. I think it was Sherman Oaks. Just open up their house and come one, come all, you know. Let's talk what would just happen for the past 4 days.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Good writer, too. You know,
oh, great. I mean, what's your crazy Marv Wolfman story? You got one at a party?
I don't have crazy. I don't have a crazy Marv Wolfman. He's like a pretty conservative, decent person. You know, I don't really. Yeah. I didn't. There's no party stories with Marv.
No.
But no, he was just an appreciative. He was when he would write scripts, the thing is like, you know, he's one of those people that you could tell just enjoyed writing and coming up mm-hmm. with stuff. He was as into the characters as you were. And I'm notorious, especially on Batman, for changing the living hell out of a lot of scripts to make them work better for animation, you know? And Marv Wolfman, the story editors, like Marv wrote, was it Feet of Clay Part 2, right? I believe so, but whatever it was. Anyway, the story editors tried to get me fired because I changed their wondrous script so much. You know, I would change it with the blessing of Alan Burnett and with the blessing of Bruce and Eric. So I'm not going off half-cocked, but they would actually go take the stuff to management and say, look what he's done to our stuff. And Marv Wolfman would always say, I love what you did. I love how you changed that. That was, you know, I was struggling with that. And you figured it out. It's like, it's great. What a great solution. You know, he's one of those guys.
He was a champion for you is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, it's like if the cartoon looks good, you know, he enjoys it, you know, instead of scowling and saying, why am I not in charge? No one appreciates my genius. Why? I hate the world. Why get into cartoons if you have that attitude? Why do comics if you don't love it? Because comics do not pay that much, you know? No. So you better love what you're doing, because that's all the enjoyment you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, like I said, we've I think we've covered some groundwork here. There is one thing that I would love to have you back on and do a part two, and sure. I want to go through all your credits and pull. So when we do these episodes, I never say like, hey, this is what we're going to talk about. This is what we're going to do, because I like just wherever the conversation goes. You know, I loved hearing the Jack Kirby stories, the Denny O'Neil stories, you know. Sadly, none of those guys are, you know, here anymore, you know, so the only thing that we have is just these passed down stories, these passed down legends, quotes, whatever you want to call from these guys. And we just continue the legend that is these guys and gals throughout animation, through comic books, through DC, through Marvel, through Disney, through, you know, insert, you know, whatever studio or every studio or production company that comes through here. And, you know, so I like these initial episodes. And then whenever I have you guys back on for a part two, I always love diving deep into like the nitty gritty. Cause you know, I've had a couple directors on, but I haven't had a couple directors on that have done the stuff or touched the stuff that you've touched that I've just absorbed for the last 30 years of my life. And on a regular basis, like I said, so, this was a great first episode. I can't wait to do this. If you're up for it, man, if you want to come back on for a part two, I'd love to have you back on and we can really talk these. And we can really talk. Yes, we can really talk these episodes.
I'd happily come back.
Oh man, that's a cool thing to hear. And I actually brought this up with Dan. So I'm gonna reach back out to Alan. And I know you guys are getting ready to do some cons too. In the next couple of weeks. So I got to make sure we plug those and put your dates in there as well. But I'm gonna try to get all three of you guys on, match your guys' schedules, because what I love doing, especially as of recent, is getting multiple of you guys on, because that's when the stories really come out from production. I had to write this because of this. I had to do this because of that. You know, Kevin kept changing my scripts and my stories, so I had to change it here. I had to change the drawings here. You know what I mean? So it's always fun hearing you guys banter back and forth.
Yeah, no, like Dan Reba and myself, like we started, we were in animation at Deke in from 83, you know, so it's like Dan was the first guy I called when I got the job of Batman. It's like, you know, and he already knew, you know, he knew all about the show, and I thought I was going to surprise him. It's like, he's like, yes, I'll come over. No, it's like, yeah, it's like Dan and me, like we, oh God, there are a lot of stories there. We spent a lot of time like doing shows, like rescuing shows, because there's always that storyboard artist that totally failed. And it would just end up me like drawing, handing Dan the page and he's inking. And then, you know, Dan does the drawing. Like, here, Dan, can you draw that, you know, draw the blimp. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Hand it back. We spent many years doing that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but you know, that's, yeah. And we're still friends, you know,
there that's got to say something right there.
Friends with.
That's always a good thing to do when you can have some friends, man. Yeah. So yeah, like I said, I'll set that one up. I think that one will be a lot of fun to have all three of you guys on at the same show. Now with that being said, like I said, we alluded to you guys getting ready to do a con together, man. Do you know what those dates are, so we can tell the fans?
Not off the top of my head. I know
that's okay. It'll be in the description and the show notes below.
I think I'm going to be with the Heroic Fine Arts Gallery. We were just at the LA Comic Con with Brad Rader and Alan Burnett and Dan and myself. We were at the LA Comic Con with Heroic Fine Arts Gallery. That's James Fletcher and, you know, and just the gallery he runs. He does the conventions. He has like the selection of animation cells.
Yeah.
That just really great stuff. So it's like I usually go, if I'll do the conventions with him, because it's like, you know, they're always pulling out Batman cells and stuff for me to sign. You know, and they pull them out from episodes that I've directed. You know, they're knowledgeable enough there. I'm going to be in Kansas City, I believe, in March 8th, in Kansas City. I don't know what the con is. It's like the Kansas City con, but I'm going to be with the Heroic Fine Arts Gallery there. And then there's I think I'm going to be in Tennessee, and I'll be back in New Jersey in June at the Garden State Comic Con. That's in June. I don't know the exact dates, but the Garden State Comic Con, you know, and that's always a good show in Morristown, New Jersey. It's right where I went to school, the Kubert School.
Gotcha.
So right next door to Dover, New Jersey. But Morristown, wonderful little town. I always enjoy places where they have really good diners, you know?
Oh, the last little bit of Americana. I work in the food industry, so diners, I love that whole aesthetic. I love that whole vibe. You know, that Nighthawks painting comes to mind whenever I think of diners.
I grew up, my mom was a waitress, and I grew up in Chrome Diners.
Yeah.
Olympia Diner, and I was like an all-night dishwasher and short order cook. Yeah, I learned to cook in a diner.
Anyway. What was your favorite dish to eat in a diner?
Well, if you're on the road and you're going through New York and New Jersey, especially New Jersey, filet of sole is always good. You know, filet of sole dinner. That was, you know, it was like filet of sole and like fries.
Yeah.
Always good, you know.
Can't beat it.
but then again, you know, it's like they don't really do it out here on the East Coast as well. On the West Coast, sorry. The East Coast, though, is like just like half my family's from Maine, and just diner breakfast is all good. You know, just something about, you know, potatoes just cooked, not hash browns, but, you know, the thick chunk potatoes cooked on that grill with all that grease, you know, and just like the eggs, you know, over medium. The only way to get it right is on that big flat grill that all those diners have, you know. I don't know. There's something about East Coast toast that's just really good, you know.
If this episode of the podcast has made me anything, it's made me fucking starving, Kevin. So thank you. So like I said, all those show notes for the upcoming shows for Kevin, Dan, and Alan will be in the description in the show notes below. So make sure you point click and give it a go. And if you can be in that same state, go in there and ask these guys some questions about the greatest Batman of anything Batman. You know, like I said, you guys did. I'm not a religious guy, man, but you guys really did the Lord's work with the animated series. I can't go ahead.
And just to answer that one, it's like the thing about going to cons, and I do enjoy going to the cons, and like I have a bunch of, after going to a couple of cons, especially like in New Jersey, where I had like this really maybe 17-year-old girl come up to me and go, "You're my favorite director. I'm so glad to meet you." And I'm like, how can I be her favorite director? And it's like, it's because Batman just came out on HBO Max, and it's the first time they're seeing it. And it's like, there's this whole new group of people that are experiencing it for the very first time. You know, like, and it's very funny that Batman the Animated Series that came out in 92 is this generation's favorite Batman. Yes. Kevin Conroy lives on, you know, it's like, And if I'm at conventions, I always do sketches for people, and they're always asking me mainly that I just draw what people want me to draw. Mm-hmm. And I just end up drawing Batman, Joker, Harley's like big, Poison Ivy's big, you know, I just end up doing that. And I've done a lot of, and I bring to the convention, I bring a lot of Batman orientated drawings, postcards and stuff, just because I'm just one of those guys that it's not fair if other people are charging for signatures. It's not fair that I give signatures away. I always like feel weird doing it.
Yeah.
But I do posters, you know, that I'll sell for, you know, however much. Depends on the convention, depends on the venue. But it's like, I'll gladly do a signature and sell the poster.
Yeah.
Or I'm giving the poster away for free and they're paying for the signature. You know,
it's a win-win no matter what you're doing, man.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's what I do. That's what I do at conventions. So if you guys want to come and get a poster, if you want a piece of my art, it's always possible to get it, you know, and I do commissions and I do, and I'm just really happy that it's not like the cartoon Batman, the animated series. It didn't die away. It didn't go away. It didn't just disappear. It's like, it's brand new for a whole new generation of fans. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you guys made something everlasting.
Yeah, it's not something I would have predicted for my life, but I'm glad that it happened. You know, it's a good thing.
Oh, it's a great thing, man. Like I said, I can't wait to do this again. I can't wait to get all three of you guys on the same call. So, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's gonna be a lot of fun to be had on those, oh, yeah. man. Wiser words have never been spoken, man. Oh yeah, it will. Well, he's been Kevin. I've been Julian. It's been a What's My Head podcast, and this has been another piece of your childhood. Good night.